Welcome to the Canva Guided Meditation for Stress at Work. Impending deadline? Generate Canva presentations in seconds.
So fast.
Brainstorm got too big? Ooh. Summarize with AI in a click. Writer's block? Release with Canva Magic Write.
Magical.
Stress less and save time at canva.com. Designed for work.
I'm Josh Muccio, and from Gimlet Media, this is The Pitch. Now, this is usually the show where real entrepreneurs pitch to real investors. But today, we have something a little different. A few months ago at South by Southwest, I talked to a venture capitalist who is changing the face of Silicon Valley before our eyes. She entered the VC scene 3 years ago after she realized something.
I think that there were a lot of people who were being underestimated, overlooked, and certainly underrepresented. I think more and more we're seeing that they had always been working on amazing things, and they just weren't being given the same tools and the same access that other people were. And I thought that was wrong in the world, and I wanted to right it.
This is Arlen Hamilton, CEO and founder of Backstage Capital. She's also the subject of season 7 of another Gimlet podcast, Startup. If you've heard her on that show, you know what it's been like for her, a Black queer woman, to break into the world of VC. But in my conversation with Arlen, I wanted to hear her story from a slightly different perspective, that of an entrepreneur. And her path to venture capital has been, let's say, unique.
Tell me about your story. Tell me, where did you start? So what were you doing before you decided to start the first fund?
A lot of stuff. Totes stuff. I'd always kind of moved around. There's like new words for it now, like new terms for it that are like fancy, like career jumper or these different things that are like, the positive side of it. But mostly I was doing data entry and odd jobs, but then I got into touring.
Yes.
So if you ever see a concert, go on to a concert tour, there are many dozens of people who put that together and who work on that from show to show. And I was one of the people who would help manage and navigate that for each artist.
So what made you make the switch and decide, I want to get into VC from there? Like, the path doesn't seem immediately clear to me.
Yeah, it's not clear. We're figuring that out. So around 2012, I had been on the road. I had, really worked my way up to where I was. And that was a long few-year process.
It was, to become a tour manager.
To become a tour manager, production coordinator, someone who was, I broke my way into that as well, the whole industry, and was on a path there from not knowing anyone there to being on tours and on arena tours with Jason Derulo and Toni Braxton and all these different people. Not as glamorous as it probably seems, because there's a lot of hard work that goes into that. But I had worked my way up to that. I was very excited and happy about that. But I was also, a lot of times off the road, because it's not a very steady job. So I'm always curious about things, always want to learn about things. So I started learning and seeing different things about startups and what that meant. What does the word startup even mean? And the more I learned about it in 2012, the more I understood that it was like the future. It was opportunity. It was innovation. All these things that I was very excited about in general and had felt alone in. And I had always considered myself someone who was an entrepreneur, but things hadn't always worked out. I felt like I was behind.
Yeah.
So I started a magazine, for instance, in my 20s, bootstrapped it. And on the customer side, we had a lot of customers, and we had a lot of people who just said it was their favorite magazine. It was the best magazine they'd ever seen or held, or it was amazing. But on the business side of selling this coffee table magazine, essentially, for $5, because I didn't know any better, because I didn't know that it was worth 15,
yeah,
or I didn't trust that it was. And so it just ended up not working after 5 years. It didn't work. And I had felt like somehow I had failed, But that was the end of 2018 when everything was crashing. But I didn't know
2008?
That. 2008.
Yeah,
yes,
got
right.
It.
2008 when everything was crashing, but I didn't know it. I felt like, oh, I failed alone. But it was like, no, like the whole world is
the whole world just
yeah, but I didn't know that, you know, and when you're isolated and you're working on something and you just don't know. So I didn't know the things I didn't know. So then years later, you know, I figured it out and I got something, went somewhere else. But years later, I'm 2012, I'm looking back at 2008 with the new information about the fact that a lot of people went under in 2008, especially the quarter four, which is when it happened with me, quarter three and four. And like a lot of these same guys, and mostly guys, are like balling now because they went through it. And in Silicon Valley and in the and the startup world, that's a badge of honor.
Yeah.
You've failed at a startup.
Totally.
I'm like, failure is a badge of honor. Like, sign me up. Even Elon Musk, who's here, I know, he attempted things. He attempts things still that don't work. But it's the attempt that gets you to the rocket ship in the sky. You know, you have to keep doing that. And I do think that a lot of Black and Brown founders and a lot of women do not even get that chance to attempt. And so that is what I'm trying to break through. That is what I'm trying to get us into the arena to do.
So do you remember the moment when you decided, you know what, like, it sounds like there was this mindset change for you. Do you remember the moment where you decided, you know what, I'm going to go on the other side of things and become a VC?
It was over a few months it started in 2012 and it was kind of figuring it out. So I didn't necessarily say I want to be a venture capitalist. I said, okay, now I've learned about the tech industry. I've learned about what startups are. I'm also seeing this weird disparity between the amount of money that anyone who's not a white male or straight white male gets in my, you know, from my experience, not my opinion or my like chip on my shoulder, but actually looking at the data that I had collected in person, there was just not the same sort of opportunity or capital going to anyone that wasn't in that category. That kind of happened over 2012 and 2013. And I said, how do I, as someone who doesn't have any money, like if I were an angel, I would just start writing $5,000 checks and like getting that going. That would have been an easy.
How do I help with this problem that I'm seeing?
Exactly. How do I go from it not being a problem, then it's like you do something about it.
Yeah.
That just seemed right to me. And I said, I don't have that. So how do I crack this nut, basically? And I thought about it, and I said, and I had also researched venture capital extensively, just on my own, just because I'm just a curious person, and I had looked at the people that were in venture capital were interesting to
me. It's a fascinating world.
It is. It's really interesting. So I looked at both, and I said, well, I'm not an angel yet. One day I will be, but I'm not yet. And, you know, if that guy can do this, I can probably do it.
Hell yeah. So how did you actually do it? How did you actually convince the people to give you money so that you can invest in founders?
Yeah, that's I think that's a big question because it took a long time. It took 2.5 years of trying to get one yes,
wow.
And it trying every day of my life.
And what was your network like? Like
it started out, my network was my mom who's here and. She has a good network, though. I didn't start too small. She knows people. I don't know people. And it started out, you know, it's funny because even though I have, you know, had all these ups and downs financially, I have also lived a really kind of nomadic,
sure,
strange life. And I know a lot of people in a lot of towns and that they do different things. And we met under circumstances of, oh, I was helping out this indie band one day and we met them at the club and they happened to own something, you know, they own a bank in town or something. So I knew people. I had never gone to those people for money before. It was always like, usually them writing me, can you get me a ticket to a show or something like that. So I knew some angel type of people. And so at the same time that I was learning about startups, I was teaching people in other cities, like, and locally, I was teaching them like how they could be an angel and then showing them deals. So I had a little bit of that. And then I started reaching out to anyone I could who I learned about online. So if I saw Brad Feld and I read his book, I'm going to get in touch with him. If I read Joanne Wilson's blog, Gotham gal, get in touch with her. And I just did. I started reaching out to everybody.
So you finally get a response. Were you getting meetings with these people along the way?
I was getting responses and I was getting meetings.
One of those first responses was from Brad Feld. Arlen sent him an email that was, according to her, about the length of the Declaration of Independence. And even though that isn't the approach she recommends nowadays, Feld wrote her back. He didn't end up investing right away, but he did help out in one important way. He started making introductions, which is the first step to getting money in the bank.
So you, for 2.5 years to your first check, and then did the money just kind of pour in? Like once you get Brad or people like,
yeah, it just started raining from the sky and that DJ Khaled song, all I do is win, win. We just started playing in slow motion for some reason. No, it still has not been that way. Yeah. I'm looking forward to the day. You will know when I have made it when I'm wearing purple tracksuits all the time and not caring what anybody thinks about that. That's when you'll know, like, something has happened in her world. I promise you, that's it.
That's it.
I plan on being eccentric as AF.
I can't wait to see that
when
tweet.
It happens. No, it was brick by brick by brick. Still is to this day. But I would say, you know, it took 2.5 years to get the first check. It took 1.5 years to raise the first million. And then it took 6 months the next time to raise a million. And then it took maybe 2 months.
Got it.
Next time. So it's
it's getting better every fund you raise.
It gets better every time we raise. It's still hard.
Yeah.
But it's relatively, you know. But because what I'm doing is, you have to imagine, what I'm doing now, the position I'm in today is kind of where a lot of people get to start. So I had to get us here to just be at the starting line. That's how I look at it.
Yeah.
But that means, if you think about the math of that, that give me a couple more years and we'll be looking at people behind us.
Yeah, leaving them in the dust.
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
So it's early days still,
yes.
Even though I'm sure it feels like you've been at this forever.
Yes.
You know, a lot of the investors that we talk to on the show, they've been at this for 10 plus years. They've got, you know, companies that have been successful, had successful exits, you know, behind them. And when I ask them about the first days starting out, and particularly when it comes to investing in companies, there's not that emotion there, because it's over time, it kind of becomes just numb. Like you don't remember it the same way.
Yeah.
And one of the things I'm really excited to talk to you about is, because you're only 2 to 3 years into this, like some of those lessons have to be really, really fresh.
Yes, they're happening now.
Are there, I'm sure. Are there any hard lessons that you didn't see going into it that you want to share?
Hard lessons. Yeah, it's always going to be a little tough for me to compare myself to other VCs in terms of the journey.
Sure.
So I look at everything as a lesson. I definitely am now, today I'm like more jaded about things than I was 3 years ago. I still see a lot of opportunity though. I don't think I could be doing this if I didn't see opportunity and hope.
Sure. So like after hearing so many pitches, you know, the sky is not as blue, like there's more.
No, it has nothing to do with the pitches. It's the, the behind the scenes stuff of building the fund.
Yeah.
Like those disappointments and how hard it is for someone. Like if I take myself out of the equation and I kind of look in and I think like, it kind of bums me out that I had to do so much just to get to the starting line. Do you know what I mean? Like kind of bums me out. And so that's a little bit of a thing, but the pitches are what makes me hopeful. Like every day I'm surrounded by innovation. How can you get tired of that? If I get tired of it, somebody put me in a tracksuit and send me off to pasture. Like, if I get tired of hearing about people, how people are going to change the future, like, I'm done. Stick a fork in me.
If someone is kind of following in your shoes and says, I want to start my own VC fund, Varlin can do it.
Don't do it. Run. Get out.
No, really?
Yes. No, go ahead. Finish your question.
Well, if someone, let's say somebody's crazy enough to still do it.
Okay. I'll talk to them.
And what would you tell them?
Well, I'd start off by the same question you asked me. Why?
Why?
Yeah. And we go from there. And if the answer has anything to do with making money, then I would tell them, go get a gig. You know, go work for someone else so you can sleep at night.
Yeah.
If it had to do with, I would listen for some very specific wording around it to think that it was even enough to want to go through this. It's not easy. And same thing with building a company.
Yeah.
It is not easy. So you have to think about the next 10, 20 years. Do you really want to? Do you really think that the effort is going to be worth the reward for you? And do you have a true understanding of what really goes into it? You may not have to go through what I went through. You may have a different journey, most likely will. But there's always a sacrifice when you're starting your own fund. And you can talk to any micro VC fund manager, and they'll tell you the same.
Do you think it's because of your strong why that you've been able to find success?
100%. But I think our why was probably the reason that I had so much trouble at the beginning.
Sure.
One of the reasons. Another one could easily be that, you know, I'm so new to this. I mean, I don't overlook that. But yeah, I think the why at first was scary to people, or was just not enough, wasn't compelling enough. It wasn't that there was a lot of people who did not think that there would be any financial return. They had to be convinced, and I think they're starting to be convinced now, and they will be over the next couple of years. And they didn't look at it like a venture investment. They looked at it as a philanthropic investment.
Ooh.
But today, it's getting better.
Coming up, we'll hear more about Arlen's unique take on founders, the power of pattern matching, and when we can expect the grand debut of her purple tracksuits. All that after a quick break.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Wow, that guy means business.
Just an amazing player.
No, not him. The sports photographer behind him.
What?
He has a business bank account with QuickBooks Money where he earns 5% annual percentage yield. So he's scoring big on and off the field. You might even say he's the MVB.
MVB?
The most valuable business.
Making your money work harder. That's how you business differently. Intuit QuickBooks. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Welcome back. You're listening to my conversation with Backstage Capital founder and CEO Arlen Hamilton at the 2018 South by Southwest Festival. Before the break, we chatted about the why behind Backstage Capital. Now it's time to turn to the real stars of VC, the founders.
I sense that you have a passion for founders.
I do.
Otherwise, why do this, right? So what, it's hard to be a founder.
It's very hard to be a founder.
So damn hard. I can't imagine being an underrepresented founder. How much, to talk about piling on top of, you know, an already difficult thing. What do you tell your founders? How do you coach them through?
Yeah, I think it's a mixture there's a great network of us. It's not just me. You know, there's a lot of people that they can go to. But I do think it's a mixture of telling them kind of what the road ahead looks like, because I've been there. You can kind of just kind of drive back a little bit and say, hey, there's going to be a little bit of turbulence, you know. It's a mixture of that, which is just direct mentoring or advice. But it's also mostly just relatability, because I went through it and I'm going through it. So it's a lot of times it's not so much in what you tell a founder who's underestimated, underrepresented. It's what you hear, what you are willing to listen to hear them say to you. Because a lot of times that is the problem, is that they're not being heard. You know, microaggressions happen all the time. And the trouble with microaggressions, besides them themselves, is that a lot of times the people around you don't see it happen. So you are kind of alone in this thing. If you walk down the street and a person walks by you and says, man, I hate that shirt, man, it sucks, and you're the only one who heard it and it kind of hurts your feelings, and you go and tell someone else and they're like, are you sure they said it to you? That's what happens all the time with microaggressions with like people of color and women. It happens all the time. Like, well, somebody will treat us poorly in customer service or something, and then someone will be like, did you see that? How they talked to it? And they're like, oh, no, I missed it, because it's a microaggression. That's the point. And so a lot of times it's in that relatability of being able to talk to a founder who said, you know what, someone said this phrase to me and it felt off in an investor meeting. And to have 3-4 other people in the room say, yeah, you're not crazy. That is not right. And I've been through that too. That is kind of the difference, I think.
Just having that validation.
It's
like being heard.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. You're not alone.
Yeah, and I try to lend my confidence and belief in them, lend it back to them. And anytime I get when you ask about like what do I tell them, and I also siphon male privilege. I also mine white privilege, and I.
How do you do that?
By studying what would he do, what would that they do over years. So I sometimes, like, I'll give an example, the male privilege thing. Sometimes, like one time I was owed money for something that I did as a remote job when I didn't have any money, like 3 years ago. It's like I did this whole project online, the person didn't pay me for it. And I was just like sending them emails like, can you pay me, please? Because I can't eat. Can you pay me? Because you owe me. And they were like, yeah, we'll get to it in like a month or whatever. We're reconciling our whatever. And so then one day I looked in and I said, I honestly don't have any money. I have to fix this. So I just sat down and I said, what would a white man write right now? Honestly. And I was like, you will give me my money within 24 hours or we will have a problem. This is the PayPal account. This is when I expect to see it. Click, send. Within 24 hours, that money was in my PayPal account. And so it's about studying what other people do that is very natural and normal sometimes to them and saying, I want some of that. Or being in a room when you're the only black person in the room and you're like, oh, so that's how they get that deal done. Or that's what they say to each other. Okay. And you take that mental note and you do it. And so I mine it and I keep some for myself. And then I pass a little bit around for others.
Yeah. Now you've invested in how many companies now?
We're at about 80 now.
80 companies.
Yeah. In 2.5 years.
2.5 years.
That's a lot of companies.
Is that a lot of companies?
It's a lot of companies. Yeah.
You sound very proud of that.
Oh, I'm proud. Thank you. I wasn't doing it for applause. I was doing it for like, I'm exhausted. It's a lot of companies. I'm very proud of it. I'm very proud of the companies and the founders. And we were just with several of them, about half of our portfolio yesterday. Co-founders, we just took a family picture and that family is growing. It's big. So I'm extremely proud of what everyone's working on. And yeah.
That's awesome. So how does it feel to be that voice for all these people?
A voice.
Yeah.
It feels really cool and awesome, and I'm humbled and proud of it. It also is funny to me because I was kicked out of so many classes in high school for being too much of a voice. Your voice is booming. Get out, go to the principal's office. And now you're telling me that just by being myself and saying what I feel, that is drawing people towards me instead of sending people running. Or some people, I'm sure, are still running. But that, to me, it's funny. And it's like, it's just another testament of not changing for other people, because you never know that there are people who are looking for you. So if you change who you are, you're going to miss out on the people who are all had been looking for you the whole time. So that's been kind of powerful for me to understand.
So what do you look for in a founder? What is the Backstage Capital MO?
I personally pattern match for myself. Which is what a lot of VCs do. They pattern match for themselves. So I do that. I pattern match for
which is part of the problem.
So I turned that on its head.
Yeah.
Like if pattern match, that's what I said at the very beginning. If pattern matching, like the beginning of starting the process, I said if pattern matching is a problem, or if that's the thing that happens, let's turn that around and say, well, I'm going to pattern match for like a overweight black gay lady and see what I find.
Yeah. How's that working out so far?
It's been awesome. I mean, it's been sweet. And so like if you look for, you know, what, and I pattern match for, I've said this too, like I have a bias towards women who are holding their baby or multitasking when it comes to their children when it in work. I have a bias towards that rather than it being scary and like, oh, you have too much on your plate. No, she's a multitasker and she's going to get it done. Like that's, so kind of everything that historically has been like a red flag for people to me is like a gold mine.
Yeah, that's awesome. So earlier we started out with your why.
Yes.
And obviously that's super important to you, to everything you guys are doing. Like, do you have a greatest fear? Is there something, you know, like you find yourself, I don't know.
I
struggle with imposter syndrome and things like that where it's like.
I don't have that anymore. I definitely struggled with that for several years in this industry. I don't have it anymore. I can't afford to. Because I'm doing this for a lot more people than me, so I have to kind of get over that. But I do have a fear. It's kind of deep, and it's kind of deep. I feel like I need to do a lot in the next 10 years because I feel like I just have this kind of phobia of not being here, like, mentally. I don't know. I thought it was deep. I thought it was weird.
Yeah.
But I honestly have like a phobia that like in my 40s or 50s, I'll go crazy.
Yeah.
And so like I'm just trying to just do what I can now.
Yeah.
Don't feel sorry for me though. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun ride. I'll be in the tracksuit. I won't know who I am and everybody will have to like steer me to the right. It'll be great. Don't worry about it. I'm setting myself up. I'm going to have like 3-4 nurses. It's going to be all good. I'll be fine.
So you mentioned 10 years. From now.
Yeah.
Do you think a lot about what things look like 10 years? I mean, as a VC, like that's kind of your job.
Yep. I think about it all the time.
What, like, can you paint the picture for us?
Yes.
Of the world in 10 years
in
from
10
your
years.
Point of view.
Ooh, 10 years is a long time to make some stuff happen. It really is.
Right.
So I feel like in 10 years, I will probably be like at a really cool apartment, like on the top floor or something, like great view, would have been exhausted, but I would probably still be watching General Hospital. But I probably would now own the rights to General Hospital, and there will be a character on there with my name. So there are going to be so many black millionaires and billionaires from the tech industry in 10 years. Y'all don't even know. It's going to be like, it's just going to be a new guard. It really is. And there would have been dozens and dozens and dozens of really high profile exits by women and people of color and LGBT founders that without fail. There will be hundreds, if not thousands, of angel investors who fit that same profile who are also seeding innovation. I will have like 80 to 100 purple tracksuits.
Keeps coming back to
different,
the tracksuits.
Different material, depending on what the day brings. And I will change like 3 or 4 times a day.
So why are you waiting on the tracksuits for 10 years?
Because it has to be... No, it would have already been...
Oh, you're building up to it.
Yeah, I think the tracksuit comes 2020. I think okay. it's gonna be on in 2020. Because it's going to happen when... It's just, I don't know the milestone yet. It's going to be like either my first personal million or it'll be like a huge exit from our portfolio. Something, I promise you, you're going to look and you're going to see me in the tracksuit and you're going to say, something happened. Something happened yesterday. Yep.
That's awesome. So I want to...
I should say also, it's going to be very diverse, a very diverse 10 years. People are just going to be... You're going to walk into a room and it's just going to be white people, black people, Latinx people, Asian people, everybody working together. We will look back and say, do you remember how weird it was when like there weren't any people of color in here? And then like white guys would be like, man, it was so boring. I'm so glad y'all came here, man. It was so cool. That's what it's going to be like. Go ahead.
I like that picture a lot.
That was my conversation with Backstage Capital founder and CEO Arlen Hamilton. Stick around after the credits for Arlen's take on haunted hotels. And we know you miss us, so I wanted to give you some recommended listening to tide you over till we return with new pitches. Check out episodes featuring startups backed by Arlen's fund, Backstage Capital. They include Hostfully, episode 36, Popcom, episode 31, and ShareShare, episode 29. You'll find links for those over on our website. And finally, if you want to learn more about Arlen Hamilton, you can check out fellow Gimlet show, Startup. Season 7 features her story. Thanks for listening. We will return with all new pitches starting August 15th. Our show is produced by me, Josh Muccio, Molly Donahue, and Kareem Maddox. We are edited by Blythe Terrell. We're mixed by Enoch Kim. Original music composed by The Musemaker. Our theme music is by Breakmaster Cylinder. Special thanks to Arlen Hamilton and all the folks at Backstage Capital, along with the South by Southwest crew. Shout out to Victoria Barner for producing the live version of this show. All right, you've been listening to The Pitch from Gimlet Media.
Haunted hotel rooms after I've stayed there, apparently. Is there anything I'm afraid of?
Really?
Yeah.
When did this happen?
This happened in, was it Albuquerque? I think it was Albuquerque.
I stayed in a hotel.
And it was a hotel that was given, like, we were put up in because I was speaking there. And I was on the top floor, and I was like, it was cool. It was like an older hotel, had a lot of character. And then, like, I started hearing all these, like, witches screaming.
What?
Like they were being, like their souls were being taken from them into the afterworld. And I was
straight
like,
up.
Oh, that's interesting. But it was because the wind was whipping. The wind was whipping and it was just so loud at the window. So then I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. It's funny. So I went to a meeting and I told someone and they're like, are you staying at the haunted hotel down the street? And I'm like, which one? And they told me the name. So it wasn't like they were just making it up. And then I'm like, what are you talking about? And they said, oh, it's haunted. Like that's, like they do shows about it. It's haunted hotel.
What?
And I'm like, Who and why and where am I? You know, I asked the why question. Like, why are we here? But by then it was just like, and I went back that night and I put a little something by the door and I put a little something by the window. I switched rooms so I wouldn't hear the wind. And then I put a little something so that I was like, in the morning, I thought about it. I said, it probably is haunted and that's okay. And I thought about who would be haunting it. Are they mean or maybe they're nice and they just want to say hi or they just want to like look at you and they're creepy. So I just went to sleep and I put a little something by each one to say, if I get up and they have moved or something has happened, then I know. Because I wasn't going to switch hotels at that point. Because I was like, I'm not going to let these banshee, like witch people like scare me away. And, woke up the next... I mean, I was scared, though. I was scared.
Yeah.
And then I woke up the next day, and everything was good. Everything was in place, so...
Whew, that's a close one.
And I thought, maybe they only haunt white people. Like, maybe they don't have any use for me.
That's probably it. That's probably it.
Sorry, what was the question? You asked me what I was scared of.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip?
Smart Water Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure, it's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smart Water Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.